B-Pod Studios.
This is 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sounds like fact, not opinion to me.
This is Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Red Sox 8-1 winners over the Baltimore Orioles last night. It was the debut for Kyle Schwarber, scoring a couple of runs. Red Sox now 67-51. Have they turned things around? You get the debut from Schwarber last night. Chris Sale making his debut on the mound for the first time in 2 years. Coming off this Tommy John surgery today, Chris, can these trade deadline acquisitions, how the Red Sox and the whole operation is treating Kyle Schwarber. I mean, he was at the trade deadline, but this Chris Sale thing today and how these guys are talking about it, it's a bit much, guys. Like, oh, the big trade deadline acquisition is a guy you already had.
And the players are buying into it. I don't know if you saw the story I sent you by Alex Speer in the Boston Globe today, and there's quotes in it from Matt Barnes. Basically saying, well, you know, nobody can add a guy like this, you know, well, except for Max Scherzer. So the players are buying into this idea that, you know, he's sort of a trade deadline acquisition, which is crazy to me that the players would buy into that. And they're using that organizational speak now.
Yeah. Maybe they have to convince themselves because they got left kind of high and dry at the trade deadline. But all right. So be that as it may, he makes his debut today. Can these two turn things around for the reeling Red Sox, who lost yet another series against Tampa the other day? And nice job there by Hansel Robles. That's a great pickup. Or do you want to take a nail and put it in the coffin like I did, actually, after the loss to wrap up the series loss in Toronto on Sunday?
Oh, wow. Really? That's when you started with the nails?
Well, really, Chris, it was this show last week where I was like, well, I'm out after the opening loss in Toronto. But after that and how that was capped, I'm good. At the very least. Oh, you're so pessimistic, Jim. Yeah, it's how I came out of the womb. I make no apologies for it. At the very least, here's Jim's luck. They ain't winning the division. You can forget about that. The American League East, poof, gone. They're not winning the division.
I'll take a nail for the division.
Thank you. All right.
I will take a nail for the division.
Hammer that in. But you still think they have a chance to make the playoffs?
I do. Toronto's sort of faltering a little bit. We'll see what happens with the Yankees. Here's the thing. They are getting Sale back at a good time because this is where they need to make some hay. If you look at their schedule, and I'm including last night's win over the Orioles, I'm counting that game. They have 9 games during this span against teams who are in last place, who are some of the worst teams, or they are the worst teams, I should say, in the American League. That's Baltimore, Minnesota, Texas. This is an opportunity for them to make enough hay to keep the Yankees at bay, to keep Toronto at bay. Now, that just gets you into sort of a one-game playoff, and I would not like their chances in that. But that being said, when you look at it, I think that this is an opportune time for them, and they got off to a good start last night. You know, you have to beat these teams you're supposed to beat. Why I'm taking a nail for the division is that at the same time you're playing these teams, you look at the Tampa Bay Rays, who played Minnesota last night, and counting that game, they have 10 games coming up against Minnesota and Baltimore in the same span. So I don't think you're going to be able to make up ground on them, but I think you can keep the Yankees and Toronto at bay.
What are they going to get out of Chris Sale today? Like, what should the expectations be?
Well, I'm just reading the story by Alex Speer, my former colleague at the Globe. And in it, Cora admits they're going to keep an eye on him. And Alex is basically saying, like, they don't really expect him to go more than 5 innings. So I would expect 5 innings and 90 to 95 pitches. And hopefully that's enough for the bullpen to hold it the rest of the way against a truly terrible Orioles team. As a matter of fact, I would say Chris Sale made 5 minor league rehab starts, and now he'll make a 6th. Against the Baltimore Orioles, who are not a Major League Baseball team.
No, thanks. I mean, Chris, because this is one of the things that annoyed me, like how rigid this whole operation is. They were rigid at the trade deadline. They had their plan going into the season. They wouldn't bend from that and can't go over the CBT and all that at the trade deadline. And I also feel like this is how they're handling Chris Sale. Because, all right, you're reeling here. If he's ready to go, he's ready to go. So pitch him in the final game against Tampa. And by the way, you also get him the following week against the Yankees. Instead, you get this next tune-up, again, like this minor league Orioles operation, and then Texas next week. So I'm sure they ran some dumb computer program. They're like, well, you know, we want to have a soft landing for him, and the numbers show. Fine. But again, with the way that this team has looked here for the last couple of weeks, don't you want him in high leverage situations? So if you believe in him, and you're going to continue to sell this as this is one of your biggest, if not the biggest trade deadline acquisitions, is a guy, again, you already had. Put him in the bigger games. You know what I'm saying?
To make a difference, right? Yeah. I would agree with you on that, especially because those games, again, you know, I'm not Mr. Math. I'm terrible at math, as a matter of fact. In fact, when I went to Comm at BU, the joke was College of Optional Math, that's what Comm stood for. But those games have basically a two-game swing against right. the Rays and the Yankees. It's automatic. Like, you don't have to worry about whether they lose or not. You control whether they lose. And so you can gain ground if you put him in those games. So that certainly makes sense. And it's interesting because we started the show and I've talked about it in terms of Patriots fans being thirsty and being desperate for Mac Jones. I think the Red Sox are thirsty and desperate at this point. And I think you can see it by the fact that they just said, oh, you know, Schwarber doesn't need any minor league rehab, straight into the lineup. I mean, they are desperate to try and turn this around on the field. And also, I think, you know, baseball ops and ownership is desperate to change the narrative that they basically punted on this season and punted on this team.
I find it convenient now that, you know, your former colleague at the Globe and Dan Shaughnessy was like, well, this is who they always were. And,
yeah.
and he doesn't think this is as bad of a swoon as like the end of 2011 or, you mm-hmm. know, the bad old days pre-2004. And I just disagree.
Like, I do too.
Again, just with like the whole feel of this thing, like it does feel like the bad old days to me where it's like they're in contention. They're in it. And then, of course, at the worst possible moment during the late summer, they pull the rug out from underneath you. Like they've had that kind of feel this year. You
know? That 2013 team, right? That remind me if I'm correct here. I'm mixing up years or trades. But that 2013 team, they weren't expecting that. But they were great. And then they were in it. And didn't they go out and get Jake Peavy?
Yeah, in 13, yeah.
Yeah, they went out and got Jake Peavy. They said, okay, we have a chance here. We didn't expect it. We need another starter. We'll go get Jake Peavy, who ended up winning a playoff game for you against Tampa. So, I don't know. I just feel like, you know what's interesting to me, and I'm not saying this is Dan, because he has been critical of Bloom. I mean, he's called it, Tampa Bay by the Charles and all this other stuff, which gets ownership really mad. But I do think a lot of people have set this up as a no-lose for Bloom. It's basically, when the team was doing well, it was, wow, look, they're ahead of schedule. Look at all these shrewd moves he had, like Hunter Renfroe with his 20th homer last night and Kike Hernandez. And then when he doesn't do anything at the trade deadline of real substance, right? Because he did bring in Schwarber, but anything of real substance or necessary substance at the trade deadline, people say, well, you know, Haim just recognized that this team wasn't for real. So which is it? He built a team that exceeded expectations and should get all the credit for it, or he knew all along that this team wasn't really that good? Because it can't be both. You can't give him credit when they're in first place, and then when it's a situation where they swoon after he doesn't do anything to help the team at the trade deadline, say, well, he's just really being smart because he recognizes this team isn't that good.
Yeah, and what did he say the other day with Tom Caron of Nesson? Like, we're not going to go out there, I'm paraphrasing, but essentially said something along the lines of, like, we weren't going to go out there and make moves for PR purposes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it's like, well, you kind of did. Again, those two arsonists that they put
into
the bullpen in Big Fudge and in Hansel Robles. I keep saying it, Chris. They were an answer to a question that nobody asked. You needed help in the rotation. You needed your first baseman. You get these two hacks for what?
I know. Like, I know. Yeah, it's a great point. And here's a quote from Haim in Alex's story, just talking about Schwarber and Sale. These are two guys who have shown they can be really impactful. When they're on their games, each of them is among the best at what they do. We're very excited for what they can contribute. Look, there's some accuracy to what he's saying, but he's obviously, you know, sort of talking it up. Like, the best at what they do? Kyle Schwarber's a nice player. But, like, the best at what he does is Mike Trout, Shohei Ohtani. Like, that's the best at Vladimir Guerrero. That's the best at what he does, which is hit. He's not among the best at what he does.
Yeah. Well, Anthony Rizzo is one of the best at what he does at first base. That would have been a better fit, but maybe you ran the program there and knew, like, well, he wasn't vaccinated. We knew he would end up getting COVID. We'll go with Kyle Schwarber. We'll teach him how to play first base. DH, by the way, last night, too. Wasn't playing first. Was a DH. So I don't know where the hell they're really going to use him. So, yeah, I still think nail in the coffin. You got to take it with a grain of salt against this terrible Orioles operation. But if you want to weigh in on the Red Sox and what the expectations should be for Chris Sale, you pumped to see Sale for the first time in 2 years this afternoon over at Fenway Park against Baltimore. 617-779-0985. We'll run through some of your leftover Patriots and Cam Newton and Mac Jones calls coming up. And also want to ask Chris if he was jazzed up for the Field of Dreams game the other night that went up against the Patriots preseason game, among the two preseason games that were on that night. Nice scheduling time by Major League Baseball, by the way. Yeah, couldn't have put that on the day before, maybe this Sunday, mid-afternoon, where there's not much going on. No, let's put it up against preseason football. Nice job, you idiots. We'll get to that next on Gasper and Murray.
That's an aberration, which I freely admit.
It's Gasper and Murray.
I'm drunk, you're gross, let's go.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is Chris Gasper.
I'm not the one who's red-faced and ranting, so who's the baby?
And Big Jim Murray.
Takes in your face, sports.
Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
So an opportunity for the Yankees to be just one behind the Red Sox as they try to beat the White Sox. Tim Anderson digging in, 1-for-4 tonight. Anderson hits it in the air. Well, you can throw the party, but you never know how it's going to turn out.
Unreal.
And how about 6 runs on the board in the 9th inning alone, and the White Sox with a walk-off 9-8 win. This was some kind of night for baseball.
It sure was, and the most energetic guy on the team ends up winning it and letting everybody know about it. As soon as he made contact, he knew it was gone. And what a game.
Tim Anderson's walk-off for the Chicago White Sox against the Yankees, the Field of Dreams game. Is this heaven? No, it's Iowa. Thursday night, it's Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. And yes, I am a cold-hearted pessimist. But this heart may be two sizes too small, but I at least can watch that. Didn't watch it in its entirety. Again, it's going up against preseason football. We had to watch that, and I would have had my eyes on that anyway, especially with the debut of Mac Jones. But just a quick aside, again, as I was wrapping up that last segment, Major League Baseball, you idiots. Like, what are you doing putting this up against NFL games? Like, you idiots. Put it on the night before. Put it on Sunday at 5 in the afternoon, you dummies. Anyway, the bit that I watched early, a fair amount of it early, first few innings, and then late, you know, in studio doing the post game with Joe Murray, watch that walk-off. You couldn't have scripted it any better. And just from an aesthetic standpoint, Chris, like, yeah. Again, I might be too, the heart might be two sizes too small. I think this thing was awesome. I still like Field of Dreams. I was 13 years old when that movie came out in 1989. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's manipulative. Yes, it pulls at your heartstrings, but I still like it.
And baseball, Ray.
I know. It's cheesy as all hell, but if you're going to get choked up, there's like a dusty room type of feeling there at the end of that movie. Like, I just think you're dead inside. So,
can I give you a sneaky, controversial take?
Sure.
The Natural's better than Field of Dreams.
No, it's okay. Look, I mean, movies, music, any of this stuff, it's all subjective. Like, yeah. I'm not going to fight you on that. I mean, if you want to say 8 Men Out's a better movie than that, I'm probably not going to fight
Men
you
Out
on that.
8 Men Out is good, yeah.
Is it the best? Is it the best sports movie of all time? Absolutely not. No, Field of Dreams. Please, I don't even know if it makes top 5, top 10, but it's good.
It's good.
I like it.
It is good. It is good.
But this whole thing that Major League Baseball did, and I mentioned this in the headlines, most watched regular season baseball game since 2005. So the thing's a massive success.
Okay.
They've built this stadium. It's not going anywhere. It does seem like they're going to continue to do these one-offs. I don't think you now have to play up the whole Kevin Costner angle. Year in, year out, have the players still walk out of the cornfield and do that type of thing and have it be, the true heritage teams and the teams of the rivalries. So next year, just for proximity's sake, say Cubs, Cardinals, and then following year, Red Sox, Yankees.
You've given this a lot of thought.
I think it's a good idea because I think they really, at the risk of sounding cheesy, and it's a dumb cliche, but the Major League Baseball hit a real home run with this thing. I think it was good for them. It was timed poorly. Again, don't put it up against NFL preseason games, you morons.
I didn't get to watch a single solitary pitch of it because I was at Gillette, so I was watching the Patriots. I saw the highlights, and I'm a Tim Anderson fan, so I was happy for him. But yeah, I didn't. So I really don't know much about this, to be honest. I mean, other than I saw the highlights.
Oh, well, that's what I get for throwing this at you at the last minute, huh?
No, no, it's fine. It seemed like it was a great night for baseball. And what you're saying about it being a situation where it's the highest rated regular season game since 2005, I mean, that's really significant in a sport that has seen declining ratings for some of its marquee events, like the World Series, like the All-Star game ratings have been in free fall for a while. Yeah. So that is significant for Major League Baseball. I think the question is it just a gimmick, sort of a one-off? Will the gimmick wear off, or will it become a staple like the NHL and the Winter Classic?
I think they're probably trending towards it becoming a staple like the Winter Classic, but even that thing's become a little bit oversaturated, so I would just do the one game a year there, or maybe even hold the All-Star game there, so it has a little bit more of a universal appeal. But overall, just again, the aesthetic standpoint, how the place looked, thought it was really cool. I like the old-timey thing, and if you're going to play up the 1919 aspect of it, this is my one small nit to pick,
okay,
because they're wearing the old uniforms. It looks like the 1919 White Sox.
Shoeless Joe.
Yeah, and all of that. Even Ken Rosenthal, that nerd, is there with his bow tie and his old reporter's hat. Like, I'm down here with Ken Anderson, who just hit the walk-off. Stop. A telegram for, But Chris, if you're gonna do that, so again, you didn't watch any of this. When they start the game and Lance Lynn is like warming up before he throws his first pitch, again, it's supposed to have the 1919 feel, and you hear "You've been thunderstruck," like booming through the speakers, and working in this business and like for all the years, like I have a production mentality.
Yes.
And it's just like, well, have like a barbershop quartet. Or the B-sharps playing Baby on Board or something like that. Like,
yeah, or how about nothing?
Yeah. Oh, or just like a guy with a banjo over there playing just have it be old, or have it also be 1919 and 1989 when Field of Dreams came out. So have like the top hits of 1989.
Oh, I like that. Now, that's a great idea.
Janet Jackson, B-52s, Fine Young Cannibals. It shouldn't be, "You've been thunderstruck." some old farmer like down the road hearing that. What's that now? Is that the devil's music? What's that? I thought it was the ghosts of baseball that they were trying to raise, not the devil's music. "You've been thunderstruck." It just made no sense from a production standpoint. And then you have the Anderson walk-off, and they're blasting Fallout Boy. Like, it just seemed good. That part kind of seems stupid to me. But I liked it. I thought it was good. I thought it was really good for baseball. Again, the numbers were astronomical. Again, most watched game in 16 years with over, close to 6 million viewers.
That's great.
Across Fox and Fox Deportes.
What was the – so I have a question about this, though. What was the demographic breakdown? And because baseball's biggest issue is trying to get younger people, and this is why we always talk about the ambassador of baseball, Jared Carrabas, because he's one of the people who can do that. So I'm curious about the breakdown. In other words, do they get maybe older people, sort of the Felgers of the world, who watch the sport, but not the way they used to watch it religiously? Do those people tune in? Do they just get old fans back, or do they get new fans?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't speak to the breakdown of demographics. It's something, because I had to. Yeah, by the way, Chris, I had to host the baseball hour last night.
You did?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, my number finally came up. Maz was out, and Matt McCarthy was on a bachelor party. He said, "Yeah, I'll see you in hell, Murray." But Joe Murray was nice enough to stick around. We were talking about this, and he was asking, he's like, "Who's this for?" It's a good question. Like, who is this for? And in talking to like my friends my age, we're old and over in their mid-40s, like all those guys texted about it all night. And these are guys that usually couldn't give a rat's ass about baseball overall. Mm. Mostly their fourth sport, if they even give a damn at all. And they loved this thing. So, yeah, I think it's to try to pull at the heartstrings of middle-aged, sad middle-aged men. I think it's the answer.
Well, I think for baseball, even getting people in their late 30s and early to mid-40s is skewing the demographic younger.
Yeah.
So that's a younger demographic. So even for them, I mean, you got to start somewhere. That's a gain.
Yeah. Oh, no, they were real into it. Yeah. Sad middle-aged men. I think that's what the Dreams game was for.
Yeah.
"You've been thunderstruck" in a cornfield in Iowa. Just makes no sense.
So one thing I do know that I thought was really interesting about, this is, tangential to this, but there was a great story in the Wall Street Journal about the fact that while they're having this marquee event in Iowa, there were all these people in Iowa who are mad because they are baseball fans and they have the MLB TV thing.
Oh, and everything's
and
blacked out.
Six teams. They are blacked out of six teams. And they were talking about, I don't remember exactly, but basically they were saying like to drive from where the billboard was put up, because someone put up a billboard really trying to implore Commissioner Manfred to change this blackout. And they were basically saying, like, you can drive from like Philadelphia to like wherever. If you're a Phillies fan, you know, you can watch the Mets or whatever. And that's only like 2 hours away. But for they're blacking out teams that are like 5 hours away from Iowa are blacked out.
That blows my mind that the blackouts still exist.
I know. Isn't that weird?
That's like a relic from the 80s, I feel like. I mean, you should have access to all of these games at this point, or just in terms of regional, you know, like regional games.
Well, I mean, they do it to protect the RSNs. Like, for example, I have YouTube TV. And they'll black out. Let's say a game is on ESPN and NESN at the same time, which happens all the time. But if you have like a YouTube TV, they'll black it out on NESN based on you know, geolocation, you know, which is a little aggravating.
Thinking about it, the only reason you think that The Natural is better than Field of Dreams is because of a young Kim Basinger.
No, actually not. Oh, my God. She's terrible in that movie. And I don't mean her acting, but I just it's in that movie. She's like she's like Adrian in Rocky IV, basically, like, the whole time. Just a complete nag and, like, pain in the ass. Who's like, you can't win. Like, no. I mean, she's hot, but in that movie, I despise her.
And Rocky is a great film. And top five sports movie of all time. But, boy, that Adrian. Pain in the ass.
What a nag.
You
can't win.
Thanks for the support.
Thanks for the support, honey. I really appreciate it. Yeah, that's great. Okay.
It's just always so worried. What's her face in The Shining? Just can you not be worried for a second?
Oh, yeah, totally. Although I'll tell you, it's interesting. So we're talking about Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, the whole thing. You know, obviously you like Rocky being from there. How about when he hops in whatever that car is? I mean, he's changing gears that don't even exist as he's driving through that bridge, and they show the Pennsylvania license plate, and I'm like, how's he not getting pulled over here?
Shelley Duvall. That's what I was thinking about. Shelley Duvall in The Shining. Even before it all goes bad and Jack Torrance doesn't lose his mind. Oh, God, can you calm down?
You can't win.
Yeah, this is why you drove me so nuts. All right, well, if you'd like to weigh in on the Field of Dreams game, did you like it, or are you just dead inside like Felger and you hate the idea of this thing? You think
Felger was all about this until it happened, so I haven't been listening. What happened? Can you just quickly give me a synopsis of why he flipped? Because he was all about this thing until the actual game.
He actually thought that the game was okay. He hated how much the movie aspect of it was played up and that Kevin Costner had such a large role in it. And then mostly his thing was just trashing the movie. The game and the aesthetics of the game, he actually was into, that they hold this thing. So I think that, of course, got a little bit lost in the wash because people, you know, piling all on, of course he hates it. No, he liked the game. He just despises the movie. And that part I disagree with because, yes, it's a manipulative movie that pulls at your heartstrings.
Can I ask you another quick question?
That. Yes.
And this, again, I might be a bad human being, but it's like Moonlight Grimm, right? He's the doctor and he has to come out to save the girl.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you just kind of be like, hey, you guys are parents. Shouldn't you be trained in the Heimlich? Like, I'm going to keep playing here.
Right.
I mean, honestly, I would. I mean, I don't think I'm being real. I don't think I would have come off the field for that. Yeah. The parents will figure it out eventually.
Yeah, you just yell. You don't have to step over the foul line. Yeah. All you got to do is just put the kid over your knee and slap her in the back.
Yeah.
The hot dog will come out.
Yeah, exactly.
I got a game to play.
I mean, you got to try that first, right? Don't you try and talk them through it? And then, I mean, it's a little while before. First of all, she was, like, still conscious. You're not in real danger until she, like, passes out. And then if she's out for a little while, now you're killing brain cells. That's a real issue. He had a little more time there to try and talk them through it before he had to leave the game. I got to be honest, I'm not leaving the game. I'm sorry, I'm not.
See, we found out that Chris, also a cold-hearted individual as well. 617-779-0985. Want to give us your thoughts on the Field of Dreams game? Did you like it? Did you watch? Did you care? Or do you think it was schlocky trash like Felger did? 617-779-0985. We'll be back after this. Gasper and Murray.
This is Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Football is more than the game. Free agency, the draft, training camp, and all the play-by-play.
To the pylon with a dive. Touchdown, Patriots!
And no one covers it like we do. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Chris Gasper.
Oh, my God.
And Big Jim Murray.
Give me fuel, give me fire.
Give me that which I desire.
It's Gasper and Murray. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
If you build it, he will come.
Cheesy, manipulative.
Sure. Yep.
All of that. But if you had kind of an awkward relationship with your old man at some point early on, and like Ray did with his dad, and he only knew him as like the broken down old mule that he was, and he sees him young, oh my God, that's my father. Ah, how's that not get you choked up a little bit? I know it did to me when I was a 13-year-old lad who was obsessed with baseball in 1989. Gasper Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub. So yeah, it hits me in the feels. It's kind of the same reason, Chris, that I think a lot of dudes, like especially like washed up dudes my age and our age, Gen Xers, if you will.
Saw you sneak that in there. Yeah.
Why they love Bruce Springsteen so much. Because like the arc of the canon of Bruce Springsteen, so much of his music has to do with the troubled relationship between him and his old man.
That's a good point.
And I tell you, I was lucky enough to go with the wife to the Springsteen on Broadway thing a few years ago.
Oh, wow. Oh,
when,
yeah?
When he gets to that part, it was, don't look at me. It's like that. Like, I feel like the same people that like Field of Dreams, like, that's why you're into Springsteen. Because, it's all well known over the last 40 years. So many of his songs have to do with the relationship between him and his dad. And, like, that's... if you can't feel that, then again, I think you're dead inside, or maybe you just really had a crap relationship with your dad. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's why you get so upset about the movie. Anyway, I liked it, and I liked this production by Major League Baseball the other night. Again, I just would ask that they have 1919 music involved. If you're going to make it old-timey, really lean into the old-timiness. Now warming up for the... Now what we got for the White Sox, Lance Lynn.
You been...
Thunder. Again, if your old man Wixon down the road with the other corn farm, what's that, Mabel? You hear the devil's music coming from the cornfield? Thunder.
You win. Thunderstruck.
Paul in Hyde Park on the Field of Dreams game. You're next here on Gasper Murray. Hello, Paul.
Yeah, good afternoon. I seldom call a show, but Chris Gasper said something today that really got me there. We were talking about Field of Dreams. I like the movie. I just don't like Kevin Costner. But my favorite movie ever, baseball-wise, was The Natural.
I love The Natural.
I just think it, you talk about breaking you up.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, especially if you're a washed-up old baseball player that couldn't hit for shit. You know?
Paul, well, you didn't need to work blue at the end there if you could hopefully catch
otherwise,
that one.
Otherwise, good call.
Yep, thank you. I take it he was a washed-up old ball player that couldn't hit for poop. Paul in Blackstone on the Field of Dreams game. You're next here on Gasper Murray. Please keep it clean.
Hey, Jim, how are you?
Good. What's up?
Hey, so, I mean, the Field of Dreams thing, I tuned in for all of 5 or 10 minutes, and, you know, baseball in general, it feels like it's kind of a snooze fest. I mean, I'm 35 years old, and I think it's boring. I mean, how are you going to draw in a 15-year-old kid? Like, I don't see why the MLB is pandering to everyone's grandpa. You have a dying sport pandering to a dying audience. I don't get it.
Wow, that is that's quite the assessment. Yeah, a dying sport pandering to a dying audience. That's a little macabre, but It's not wrong.
Well, perhaps this is why Major League Baseball may be dipping their toe in the waters of Barstool. Do you see this? It was leaked to New York Post, the New York Post earlier in the week, that there could be a potential partnership there because ESPN's basically, you know, getting out of these midweek games. You had to figure there'd be blowback because it's Barstool and, you know, people are upset about everything now.
Yeah.
It's the world we live in. But in terms of trying to reach that younger demo, you mentioned, you know, you've said it before. I agree with you completely. Like, you know, Jared Carrabas might be the best ambassador for the game, especially to a younger demographic.
Like, it's not even close.
From MLB's standpoint, like, they need Barstool a hell of a lot more than Barstool needs them. Like, I would think it would make sense.
Yeah, and I think Barstool does, and Jared in particular, he does it in with Dallas Braves. They do a great job of promoting the game, showing you the personalities of the players, and connecting with a lot of the younger players. Because that's the funny thing about baseball, right? We talk about demographically who's interested in it, who's not interested in it. What's happened with people like Chaim Bloom and the Moneyball revolution is that baseball, once again, has become a young man's game on the field.
Yeah.
It's about the prospects. It's about younger players. And so you have younger employees. You have younger guys you can market. They're growing up and they're playing this game and they're the demographic you're trying to reach, but there's like a disconnect. And what Jared's really good at is showing you these guys and showing their personalities and showing them outside of uniform, which I think MLB struggles with. You know, that's why my impression of Mike Trout is amazing baseball player, personality of a shoe. That's probably not true, but MLB hasn't done a great job of coaxing out that personality.
I just don't understand how Brian Johnson of AC/DC hits those notes, Chris. Like, I mean, granted, I have a deeper voice, but I was caught in the middle of a railroad track. Thunder. I've seen them before. They put on a hell of a performance.
Do they?
But, oh, yeah. I saw them at Gillette like 10 years ago.
Are they in the Play It Right crowd?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's everything you want with a band.
So they play it right.
No noodling. They give you like just like how you hear it on the radio.
Okay.
If you're a new listener to the show, if you haven't heard this or don't listen with any regularity, my thing is this, and I should be a manager for bands. And here would you'd hate me, but you'd make a ton of money. But here would be my number one rule as the manager of your band. Just play them right. No one wants to hear your new stuff. No one wants to hear you noodle. No one wants to hear you jam. Play the songs people know. Get up on that stage. Do it right. And then get the F off the stage. An hour and a half tops. That's all we need. That's all they want. That's what they paid for. But we got the new one. Boo. Why do you think people go to the bathroom and go get the drinks? No one cares. No one wants that. Guns N' Roses, well, as close as they could. A couple weeks ago at Fenway Park.
I heard that was good, actually.
It was good. The band is great. Axl, not so much. Can't really hit those high notes.
Is he still teaching Sunday school these days?
Sunday school?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Didn't he used to be a Sunday school teacher?
Didn't he?
I think, that was like part of the legend of Axl Rose.
Oh, no, his dad was a Pentecostal teacher and like used to beat him, or the stepdad did, and he had issues there.
I could be wrong, but I thought he was at one point a Sunday school teacher.
You might be right on that. Let me, I'll do a quick cursory search on Wikipedia, okay. But to my knowledge, I don't know. I can't speak to that, but.
But he was not good?
I saw them 5 years ago at Gillette. He could hit some of the notes this time around.
Okay, on a scale of 1 to Bobby Brown, who basically, because he has a collapsed nasal cavity, can no longer hit any of the notes he used to be able to hit, where was Axl Rose?
Oh, 5-ish, depending on the songs. So, like, as the show ramped up, Chris, there were certain songs he could hit some of the high notes.
Oh, that's good. Good for him.
And it did sound like, you know, they're playing them right. But early on, they do Welcome to the Jungle, which is arguably their most well-known song. And it's a song that usually makes me and others want to run through a wall.
Okay.
The way they did it, I don't know if I could have run through Jell-O.
Oh, really?
It was slowed down. The tempo was, like, off. And it was a lot of, Welcome to the Jungle. We got fun and games. And thank you, what? How do we know the people that you find, like, forgetting some of the words, sticking out the microphone to the crowd so that we would help him out. It's a lot like if you've seen Vince Neil and Motley Crue in recent years, where he can't even waddle across the stage. And it's a lot of, like, Kickstart My Heart. Like, the last time I saw them up at Manchester at the Horizon. Oh, Chris, it's amazing. If you go to see Motley Crue now as a comedy show, it's worth every penny. If you're going to hear them play them right, you're not going to get it. You're not going to get your money's worth.
That's great.
Whoa! Yeah! Kickstart my... Never stop! Whoa! Yeah! Hey there!
Yeah.
He is a load. That would be the thing. Play them right.
Okay.
Play them right.
So I have another question for you, because I know you were mad when you saw this particular band.
The Police?
You were mad about that. That's the genesis of this. But I want to ask you, so I asked you before in terms of, ability to sing, what the scale was, one to Bobby Brown hitting the notes. On a scale of one to Stevie Nicks, how was Axl Rose as a front person?
Oh, he was better than Stevie Nicks.
Okay.
Yeah, Stevie Nicks, if you didn't hear, she canceled her entire tour right now because of COVID, the issue with the Delta variant and scares there. Doesn't think it's responsible. And if you were looking forward to seeing Stevie Nicks, let me tell you, she just did you a favor. I saw her at the Garden, the wife and I did a few years ago. Wow. Yeah, that is a body ravaged by time. And can show you firsthand why you should stay away from hard drugs. And that is someone who really can't sing anymore. A landslide. There you go. Down. Not good.
So I love Fleetwood Mac too. That makes me sad.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure they all hate each other now, so I think that they're never going to tour again. I see that Lindsey Buckingham is going to be around here, I think, some point, sometime soon. I would go see him. I hear he puts on a good show. But yeah, a lot of these heritage acts that have been around, at some point, you got to look in the mirror. No matter how bad you need the money and you're trying to do the cash grab like Guns N' Roses are, you have to realize at some point, like, maybe we should stop. He had some real issues with some of those songs.
I want you to do more of Stevie Nicks huffing and puffing through her music.
There was one song, Chris, I was convinced, if you were there that night, you'll remember what I'm talking about. She started talking, I think she thought she was in New Orleans.
No.
Because she has some song about New Orleans, and she's like, you remember all everything about Hurricane Katrina, don't you? And you kind of hear the crowd be like, yeah. Like, you're supposed to clap for Katrina? Like, she's like, well, this one goes out to everyone affected by Katrina. Like, it's not 2006. It was real weird. And I think, I don't know if the pills have stopped for Stevie Nicks. That was my assessment of that show.
Wildly talented person, though. If you look at
the
canon of her career, I mean, she was, and the note she could hit, her voice was so unique, just so talented as a performer and a singer, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And you look her up. Young. Throwing fastballs like Pedro in 99.
Yeah.
Now, and you see your gypsy. Oh, you see your girdle's on too tight. Gypsy. It wasn't a good show. And boy, did I pay through the nose for those tickets, too.
Oh, that's
like
the worst.
Third row. Like, best seats I've ever had for any show there. And this is what I see. Not great. All right, well, we've gone over here, so we'll come back. Long commercial free segment coming up next. You want to weigh in on anything we touched on? The Patriots, the game in Dyersville, Iowa, the Field of Dreams game, have at it. Red Sox, Chris Sale coming back today. I don't even know how we ended up on Stevie Nicks, but here we are. So if you want to join us, 617-779-0985. Stop dragging my heart around.
Chris Gasper, Big Jim Murray, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Sounds like fact, not opinion to me.
This is Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
It's Gasper and Murray, 98.5, The Sports Hub. You know what I wanted to ask you about that happened between last show and this one? That the Celtics signed the German Rondo. Dennis Schroeder to a 1-year deal, Chris. Mm-hmm. What did you make of that deal?
I mean, for the bang for the buck factor, I like that it was only $5.9 million. It's the taxpayer mid-level. I think that's really probably about a third of what Schroeder's market value is as a player. He got sort of boxed out here in this free agency, and he was really in trouble basically when he told a German newspaper that he and LeBron were the only members of the Lakers who were not vaccinated.
That kind of signaled the end, right?
Yeah, because otherwise it would have made some sense for the Lakers to bring him back, but I think LeBron basically excommunicated him, and that was it. And he didn't have much of a market. So I like him as a player, I do, and I think as a one-year solution, he could be good, but is he the long-term solution for them at point guard or the long-term solution in terms of a third guy with Tatum and Brown? No, he's not. He might be the difference between them being the sixth seed instead of the seventh seed.
I mean, he's good around the room, good facilitator. I like him for, you know, Tatum and Brown potentially, feisty, fast, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, when it first happened, I'm like, I was waiting within the next 24 hours. Okay, where's Marcus Smart going to be traded
to?
Because I don't know how that's going to work offensively with both of those guys. And I've mentioned this a few times during the week on Felger and Maz. There was an article behind the ESPN paywall by Kevin Pelton breaking down this move. And this part stood out to me. He wrote, did Kevin Pelton, pairing him with Marcus Smart, a 33% career three-point shooter, could cramp the Celtics' spacing a bit, even if Al Horford gives him a stretch option at center. Ime Udoka might be wise to stagger the minutes of Schroeder and Smart as much as possible. Yeah, you think? And by the way, given those guys' personalities... Like, you think one of them wants to be coming off the bench as it is? Like, good luck.
Schroeder's done it in his career before, I'm not disagreeing with you, but he's been in a role where he's like almost like a Jamal Crawford, Lou Williams, where he's coming off the bench, but he's getting a lot of shots and he's playing crunch time minutes. So that's the real question for me. Will Ime Udoka go with lineups in crunch time that have Schroeder and Marcus Smart in them? Because, you know, Marcus Smart, if he's on the bench in crunch time, he's not going to like that. So can you have lineups, to Kevin Pelton's point, can you have some lineups, you're closing lineups that have both these guys on the floor at the same time?
Yeah, I don't know. Dean and Shrewsbury on this move for the Celtics. You're next here on Gaspar Murray. Hello, Dean.
Hey, I think the Schroeder signing is great, and it's actually because of a reason you didn't get into. It allows us with Jason Richardson, Cantor, Nesmith, Pritchard, and Schroeder to match Bradley Beal's contract on all expirings without having to give up Smart or Horford.
But that's it's a great point, Dean, but now you're assuming Washington would just take all that back for Beal. They have to be willing to take that.
They'd probably prefer that to taking Smart or Horford because they're all expirings.
Maybe, but I still think there's a talent deficit there. You're basically giving Bradley Beal away. And look, this happens in the NBA. They might be forced into doing that. There's no question about it. They could be forced into accepting that deal and to accepting 33 cents on the dollar. But I still think people are underestimating the willpower of Washington to maximize this asset. They might know that Bradley Beal's not staying with them, but they also know that the future of their team is in some way tied to what they get back for Bradley Beal. So they are under no mandate to make sure that they just do the deal that's best for the Celtics and lets the Celtics keep, you know, all the pieces they want to keep. That's just not how it works.
All right, you want to weigh in on the Dennis Schroeder deal as he has joined the Celtics on the one-year contract. Have at it as well at 617-779-0985. Get you caught up with the headlines here. No commercials, and we'll circle back to the Patriots and Mac Jones. Have you seen enough? Are you already ready to anoint this guy? This is the kid. He's the guy. Is he? We'll get to that after the headlines here on Gaspar Murray.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.